Jamal Murray struggles. The young guys play. The Nuggets turn the ball over. They lose the Mavericks. Lots to break down from a really interesting game and post game on Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for joining us and making this your first listen. We appreciate you guys joining us on whatever platform you're on. You can join us on YouTube, best way to support the show. Plus, you get to join all the great folks hanging out in the comment section who we routinely respond to during the show. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. That's prizepicks.com, promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network. His name's Adam Mares. He's director of content for DNVR. Find him on Twitter at Adam_Mares. Lots of folks already with us in the chat section. All right, Adam, there's a lot to kind of get to. Why don't we start with big picture and then we can transition to the late game stuff as the Nuggets fall to the Mavericks at home in this one, 116-115 in a game that felt out of reach at certain points, got much closer. The young guys play. There's so much to kind of get from this game. Where do you want to start?
Well, it's funny. So you said like big picture, because we do over at DNVR big takeaways. And sometimes those are big picture takeaways and sometimes they're small. But I kind of like the idea of what from last night is big picture takeaways. And for me, there's a couple of them. But the number one thing is this is now a sort of an extended slump for Jamal Murray. And it was 4 games ago where he went off for 30-something points. And it was like, okay, he's back. And since then, he's kind of been back in a slump. And not just a shooting slump, but a rhythm slump. And it looks like maybe even a physical or conditioning slump. Last night, I thought that was the thing that stood out the most. So to me, the big takeaway was Jamal Murray, the Nuggets just needed him, one, to stay on the court, you know, not get in foul trouble. And two, just to be that secondary playmaker. And last night he wasn't up for the challenge. And I think that's a little bit indicative of where he's at physically and sort of in his recovery.
Yeah. I thought the Mavericks this season are sixth in adjusted defensive rating over at dunksandthrees.com. Their style of defense is kind of interesting because a lot of teams want to collapse down. They want to protect the paint first and foremost. The Mavericks are a little bit different. They want to pressure you out. They want to push you as far out as possible. They play really aggressive at the edge of the defense, and they have big, long, physical defenders on the wing, and that buys them time to recover inside. The biggest problem I thought last night was Murray driving into a crowd. Now, he only got tagged with 2 turnovers, but I felt like he was responsible for a lot more empty possessions because of him trying to make something out of nothing. I thought there was some of that the same from Bones in the first half. The Mavs' approach to defense really bothered the Nuggets guards initially before Bones started hitting contested fadeaway threes. And so that, I think, caused a lot of the problems. You know, for me, the big takeaway is, again, the turnovers.
Well, hold on, I got to refute that, because to me, the Mavericks, you look at when the Nuggets have 19 turnovers or whatever they had, usually that's a Jokic had 6, Jamal had 6 or 7, and then like everybody else, maybe there's 1 here, 1 there. Last night, the turnovers were evenly distributed amongst everybody that played. And I think to me, this was indicative of what the Mavericks were doing. They were quick doubling, to your point, getting out early once the ball went to Jokic and doubling. Yeah. And you needed secondary playmakers to be aggressive. To me, it wasn't that Jamal was dribbling into traffic and doing this. It's that he wasn't able to attack a 4-on-3, which is what the Mavericks were daring the Nuggets to do. And then when he came out of the game, Denver had a deficiency of guys that can do that. Most of the time, if you give a secondary playmaker on a contending team and say, hey, we're going to hard double early in the shot clock and then play a scrambled defense against your secondary guy, that's perfect. Like, you ask Paul George to do that. You ask, most teams' second guy, Brandon Ingram or whatever, that's like, oh, perfect. I get to attack a scrambled defense. So I wanted them to be aggressive last night, including Jamal Murray. to me, it was more that he wasn't effective being aggressive against it. Not that he was trying to be.
I think what I'm trying to say here is the way that he was trying to be aggressive was not the right one. I think that's the way that
I think that's the same thing, but yeah, I mean, you need to be able to punish a team for playing that way. And I thought there were a lot of opportunities for him too. He didn't pass or he didn't shoot when he had open shots. He would drive, but not get to the rim. Cause I think he's a little slow footed. Like even the defense playing scrambled, you know, help side and having to scramble, he still couldn't necessarily get separation from guys. So
Fernando says the ball kind of died with Jamal with a lot of his dribbling. When Jamal is struggling, I like to see him do what Bones did in Jokic, getting those pocket passes. So I think this kind of dovetails with my big takeaway, which is the turnovers. Because when you look at in the first half, the Nuggets had a monster lead in terms of how they were scoring in half court possessions. Like they were just killing Dallas. And when you really look for the entire game, it still looks very promising for a Nuggets win. But the Nuggets gave up 17 points off of turnovers in the first half. That is so difficult to try and recover from. Like, that is nightmarish to come back from. So I asked Malone post-game about, I was like, you've talked about this a million times. Is it difficult to diagnose what the specific issues are in-game? Right? Because I think it does change sometimes, where sometimes they're throwing the ball out of bounds, or sometimes they're, whatever it is. And he talked about, certainly sometimes it's, and the players admitted this too, like Aaron was like, sometimes we're just lazy. He's like, we're just lazy sometimes. That's really what it comes down to. But like Malone talked about over dribbling and then trying to pass in the midst of a crowd. Like really in the midst of a crowd. And I thought that there was a lot of that where the Nuggets were not able to. And it was interesting because what Malone was talking about was like, that's a product of spacing and how we execute our offense, which is what you're always saying, right? Is like the turnovers are a function of how the offense is functioning. If it's not functioning correctly, there's going to be turnovers.
So the worst thing you can do when you're attacking against a scramble defense is hold the ball or over dribble, right? Because then the defense is rotating back into space. And I thought there was a little bit of that drive probe, don't know what you're doing, but it was a lot of just missing the read, to be honest with you. A lot of like, am I supposed to swing it now or not? Am I supposed to shoot? Once I drive, where the help comes, where do I go with it? And there just was a lot of missing that, which made the ball sticky, which then got into like tight corners and tight spots where you're making bad reads. So no question, it was the turnover. I thought in the second half, they didn't have that many turnovers.
No, they got a lot better. And that's how they got back into the game.
Right. And it really was as simple as that. Like Denver's half court defense, one of the stories on the year has been Denver's half court defense is actually not that bad. Yeah. But yeah, those turnovers, the decision-making turnovers kill you. And that's what
Aaron talked about this last night about how he's like, look, turnovers are going to be, he also said it was interesting. He said this, he's like, look, our offense passes a lot. He's like, right. I'm just telling you from having played in the league enough, if you pass a lot, you're going to have turnovers. Like that's just
why, and this is why Dallas they're so funny is Dallas doesn't like the ball is in one guy's hand. They find a switch, then they get it to that guy. Usually it's Luka, but sometimes it's Dinwiddie or sometimes it's Wood. There's just not a lot of room for mistakes to happen. It's not very interesting. It's not very dynamic, but if you have Luka and you have Spencer Dinwiddie, you can make something happen out of that. So there is something true about the less you pass, the less variance there is, the less risk there is.
But the other thing that Aaron said was like, if this is going to be how we're going to play, we have to play hard in transition defense. Like we have to commit on that end if this is going to be who we are. And I think he was right because, Malone mentioned this. He's like, we didn't just have turnovers. We had live ball turnovers that turned into points. He's like, and he's right on this too. This is something I always say. You can have a ton of dead ball turnovers and you're probably going to be fine. It's about how many points do you surrender off of those turnovers? Because if the defense that causes the turnover can't translate those into points, it's a net, like it mitigates that advantage. You still want more possessions. You always want more possessions, but it mitigates that to a degree. They were given, it wasn't just runouts either. Right? It was like a turnover underneath the basket. They dribble down, everybody scrambled, and they give up a three. And that's stuff that they can fix, I think. And that's because what was irritating is, there's a comment in here about can we lose Ryan Saunders? And I've been critical of the defensive scheme. I thought the way that they actually attacked the Mavericks last night was actually really good. And when you say, how can you say that when they got all these threes off? If the Mavericks do not get out in transition and have high energy opportunities, they don't find rhythm and their offense bogs down. And I say that because I've seen it this year over and over again.
I mean, you may or may not be right about the, would they have made those shots or not. Sometimes teams just make shots. But I think, but you're right about the half court, I don't think was the issue. I mean, Dallas did run hot last night. And look, their style of five-out offense is going to lead to lots of threes. Last night, they made a bunch of them. That happens. But to me, it really was the transition, the turnovers that led to fast breaks that was the difference. And they, like, you probably win this game by 6-7 points, which was the spread, if you just make this a normal turnover first half and not an exceptional one.
Josh Winninger says, if the Nuggets finish top 10 in defense, I need you to shave into a handlebar mustache and start saying partner all the time. I will do it for one episode. If they finish the season as a top 10 defense, I will do that for one singular episode.
The safest bet you could ever make in your life.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll get into the late game stuff. We'll talk about Bones and the young guys getting to play again and how that was kind of foreshadowed by a number of things. And we'll talk about all sorts of stuff from a really interesting loss, unfortunately, for the Denver Nuggets to the Dallas Mavericks. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I've got to tell you about Prize Picks. A lot of fun to play. Really easy to play. Don't have to be a genius to play these things. Don't have to spend all of your day looking at models and how to build your DFS lineup. You just pick 2 to 6 players and if they'll score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, and you can win up to 25 times your money on any entry. You're not competing against other people. It's just you versus the projections. And they've got projections on any sport imaginable. How about World Cup? Get in on that. College basketball. Want to get in on a little bit of that hoops action on the college side. MLB will be starting here in a few months. They've got, obviously, NFL, which is still going strong, all those kind of things. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's just that easy. They offer safe and fast withdrawals, and they're currently operational in over 30 states and Canada. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. We're also brought to you today by Bet Online, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from basketball to football to soccer and esports. We've got it all at betonline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, you can find those at Bet Online as well. They're the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. I'm on a hot streak, Adam. I'm on 4 days in a row of plus EV. I'm 64-42-4 this season on NBA sides. Nice. I don't know how. I've just been good. It's crazy. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. Bet Online, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us and making this part of your day. I appreciate you guys being with us and joining us in the chat section. Always a lively crew hanging out in there. Okay, so let's talk about the late game stuff, and then we can get into the young guys. Does that sound okay?
Okay.
All right, so
what your take is here.
The comeback was pretty impressive to me, just that they could have lost the ropes so many times in this game. There were so many threes, and those are so demoralizing, and I kind of kept expecting them to kind of lose it. And I put out the Nuggets are cooked tweet, and they tied it up a few minutes later, and they had the lead, and they really had an opportunity to get it done. Like, Joker missing the free throw, nothing that you can do about that. Like, just stuff happens, right? The big culprit, and Malone owned up to this, he's like, it's my fault we didn't have timeouts at the end. Like, he was really kicking himself on that. He was like, if we had a timeout, I could have set up an actually good shot with 4 seconds left. And, like, you could tell he was like, that one, and we'll talk about this in the last segment. The reactions from the team last night were different from your normal regular season loss, and it's not just because it was 3 in a row.
That's why I think they turned a corner emotionally. I don't know if they turned a corner in a meaningful way, but I do feel like it was an emotional. It feels like, I mean, we'll see, but it feels like there was an emotional understanding about the team and where they need to be going and what they need to be doing, but we'll see.
So, look, I think on the last possession, you know, they asked Aaron about it. Aaron's like, he's one of the best scorers in, like, you know, Jamal's one of the best scorers in the league. Like, we want the ball in Jamal's hands there. We're fine with that. He's like, you just try and get a shot off. Them missing the free throw was honestly, whether it was intentional or not, was the best possible outcome. He makes that free throw, and I think Joker probably slings a baseball pass on target for a loop, and they get a much better shot.
Yeah.
Like, not just honestly it getting in, it being a missed free throw, it being a missed free throw that winds up in Jamal's hands is honestly worse. And you talked like Jamal is not Russell Westbrook. Jamal is not.
I know. I couldn't believe like Giannis could have had it in the paint. And yeah. I was kind of blown away at how like 4.2 seconds it got to half court or something. I was like, man,
yeah,
I know that's tough. It's not, that's not even a critique. Cause honestly, at that point you're in Hail Mary territory. You're not.
Yeah. And like, look, we've seen Jamal in the two man game with Joker have really strong stretches this season. Last night was not one of them. We've seen Jamal have really strong performances versus weak opponents, right? Last night was not one of them. This is always going to be kind of the challenge of Jamal getting back is a long-term process. And it's going to be like, it's going to take a long time for him to get to where he needs to go. And on top of that, that's why you can't have 17 points off of turnovers in the first half. That's why you can't burn all your timeouts so you don't have time to set up for a final play. Their margin against these types of teams is not wide enough with Jamal in this process for them to get clearance. It should have been, right? Like they should have been able to do this. But if you stack things against yourself with transition defense, points off of turnovers, all these types of little things, and then you run into hot shooting, like you have set yourself up with a bar, with a mountain that is too tall to climb in the game. There's a lot of paths to Denver winning last night. If Jamal's better, they probably win the game. If MPJ's back,
that's the easiest one because I thought he had like a 10th percentile game offensively. And if he would have just had like a 15th percentile game for him, I think they would have won. Dallas decided to approach this game, to me, it came so much down to your second best guy on the court at all times. And that was Jamal. It's supposed to be Jamal. And he just didn't have it last night. So to me, that was the biggest margin by a big amount. And that is connected to the turnovers. Those things go hand in hand to me.
And so I agree with you on that point. And so like, look, MPJ plays, maybe they win this game. They don't have as many turnovers. I'll tell you, they definitely win this game. Like they're up at half and they stretch it out. Go ahead.
Well, hold on. One interesting thing is, in particular against Dallas, the way Denver was doubling Luka, mostly like they weren't just going to switch or hedge and be behind or whatever and chase. They were trying to trap him, and then you throw that skip pass, and you're constantly in rotation. And I do think there is something. I'm more and more thinking about there's something to just length in those specific instances is so important because if you think about the last play of the last bucket, Dorian Finney-Smith hits a three. Bruce Brown was the guy that was the rotation guy, and he had to pick between two bad options. Do you fully go to Dorian Finney-Smith and let him swing one more, or do you fake and come back? Bruce is just not Michael Porter in size. I mean, he's in an effort and an understanding of the court, this or that. But in that moment, Bruce's stunt did nothing because he's short, and like to cover that much ground, it just looked like, oh, yeah, that's not – Dorian Finney-Smith didn't even see him.
I love something that somebody said last night. Because we were talking about on Twitter, we were talking about would MPJ have been the difference in this game, and like their offense was cooking, and I was like, I don't know that makes a big difference here. But somebody did make a really interesting point, which he's like, well, look, to be honest, they probably have fewer turnovers because MPJ is not going to pass. So, and I was like, oh, it's actually like a pretty good point.
That's weird because MPJ not passing, I feel like it's more he wouldn't touch the ball. Like some in a game like this, he might have just been KCP and maybe he hits a few shots. I don't know. I don't know if they would have won this game. It's hard to know what they would look like without Michael Porter. So I don't know.
Here's a big one, and this was talked about post game, and it wasn't Darren McKee asked about this post game, and a few folks on Twitter were talking about it as well, and there's been some chat comments as well. The question is this: should Malone have benched Jamal late in the game for Bones? Jamal didn't have it, didn't play well, all these types of things. Bones had it going. I have like a lot of thoughts on Bones, which I think we should get to.
I know that's where we're going to debate on this one, I think. But the question of should Jamal have been benched? No. I mean, like the Nuggets need Jamal to be back. And honestly, here's the crazy thing. I thought Jamal in the fourth was fine. He missed the shots he needs to hit. He missed the layup he needs to hit. Like, but I don't, the most of the game, he was making bad reads, turning it over, getting the ball, getting too sticky. I thought late in the game, you do what you're trying to do. He just didn't make any of it. And then defensively, I thought Jamal Murray in particular was really bad in this game, but I don't think he was bad in the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter, he did his defensive assignment.
I thought first half he was really bad.
He was getting blown by, like he had one against Spencer Dinwiddie where it looked like, you know, what we talk about Michael Porter, where he gets blown by so bad that you're like, did you see what you were doing? And that was Murray.
And I also say this, the Mavericks really picked on him too.
Like they looked for him. Yeah.
The Mavericks, I'll say this, and this is part of like their style, but the Mavericks in this game in particular were stabbing weak points on the Nuggets defense, right? It was let's run Jamal off a screen to generate open looks for corner shooters. Let's attack Jamal in ISOs or pick and roll coverage. Let's go after Bones on switches. Like there was just like a lot of things in here where Luka in particular was basically until late in the game when Luka did what he always does, which is he targets what he thinks are like the tougher matchups. It's really hilarious to me. This is like the most hilarious thing in the world to me that I've seen this so much that Luka loves going at the hard point on the defense. It's really funny to me.
It's funny that you say that because to me, first of all, to answer your first question, because it's an interesting one, I think Murray should have been out there on the court. I don't think you take him off there. You got to win or lose with him, and I don't think he is the type of guy that you mess with that. Jamal and Nikola and Jamal are the two guys that you go there with. And by the way, plus minus is not everything, Matt. A guy Jamal can play well, but a team can play better. And him being at plus 15 last night, to me, tells the story. Again, it wasn't that he played well. It's that the Nuggets needed a secondary guy. That was the whole thing. And here's what you're going to disagree with. I actually think for as terrible as Bones was defensively last night, and he was, I actually would have preferred to see him on the court with in Bruce's spot. Because I thought Bruce was an ineffective defender in this matchup. And so was Bones. But at least Bones gave you that option that was going to attack.
Don't disagree. I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Like,
and Bones had really bad defense. So I know some people, because I see a lot of people blaming Bones and this and that. He's got to get better defensively.
Oh, really? It's so funny what we see, because I see like the exact opposite, which is like, this game is like, Bones was phenomenal, was fantastic.
Oh, wow. No. Well, I mean, first of all, that's wrong. And second of all, I saw it on the timeline a lot. Like, his defense was really bad. But they needed him. They needed somebody that could make the secondary plays.
Let's get a break and let's talk about the young guys. We'll get into all that stuff when we come back. I agree with you. You don't bench Jamal Murray. It's just not a thing that's done. I just want to respond real quick.
But the Bruce point, before we get out of here, the Bruce point to me is something that I've really been – like we did something on DNVR yesterday where it was like, who stock are you selling a little bit or something like that. Sounds too incendiary, but who do you think is in line? I think it might be Bruce because – defensively, as though he plays hard, though he knows what to do, though he's a low mistake guy, you see how ineffective he is against bigger players. And like even Spencer Dinwiddie last night is blowing by him and is just too tall or too big so that he has to play perfect defense to get the stop. Because if he gets to a shoulder, Bruce just isn't big enough to block him. So
I agree that we have seen multiple matchups where that has borne out to be true. I also, this is kind of my Bruce thing. You know how I always talk about like guys have good months and bad months? I think Bruce is having a bad month. And I think we might look back and you might be right. And it might be just like, this is a thing about Bruce. I think we might look back in a couple months and be like, well.
We were hoping he was the fix at small forward and defensive minded lineups. And I'm just less convinced of that because of the size. Like, I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's the guy that's like, put him in at small forward and he'll do it.
Watch Me Squatch says this team is unserious. No team is serious in December.
Also, no team is serious right now. I mean, maybe you could say the Boston Celtics and maybe the Milwaukee Bucks. I'll be honest with you, two teams.
Most teams that are really serious in December and January and February, well, they get to be lots of really unserious on their free time when May comes around.
Last year, the Utah Jazz were very serious in December, early December.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the young guys who return to the rotation. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us, making this part of your day. Appreciate you guys being with us. Fascinating game, really interesting post game. Let's talk about the young guys, and then I want to get into kind of the post game reaction and how they felt post game. There was an emotional tenor to the game that honestly I think is pretty positive, but may wind up being negative, and we'll talk about that in a minute. All right, so before the game, Mike Singer asked about Bones and what Malone's message has been to Bones and said like, hey, I've been with him. And Malone has reiterated over and over again that he thinks Bones is in a tough spot. Like he just thinks he's been in and out of the lineup. He's being asked to do a lot. He's being asked to make these lineups work. And he doesn't have the reps because he's in and out of the lineup, and that's been really, really tough on him. And so he returns to the lineup, and he gets big run last night and makes a lot of shots, which I think is an important part of basketball, is putting the ball in the little circle with the net thingy. I didn't love the way that he played, but I'm a curmudgeon and
Who's this?
Bones.
Oh.
I just didn't love the way that he played, like the wraparound pass that's too fast for Christian Brown.
That was a really bad play.
And like one of the answers here is like he's got to take these contested fadeaway threes because they can't generate any offense otherwise. Maybe. I noticed in the first half especially, like he had like a three, he turned completely around like 360 degrees on like a layup attempt. He works really hard to create really hard shots. And I think you can create really hard to create easy looks, or you can take hard shots. But to me, that balance is something that's still out of whack, but he was hitting them last night and they needed it, and they outscored the Mavericks bench by a ton. So I don't know what I'm complaining about. Your thoughts on Bones?
He's also on the season now, 44% on 6.5 threes a game. I think part of what we don't know right now is that who Bones is? Is he actually a really good three-point shooter on difficult shots? Because if he is, that changes the equation. Like Steph Curry in his second year taking these shots, but I don't know if I love that. Well, if he can make them, then okay. And this is one of the things I'm not sure about. Like Bones hits threes at a pretty high rate so far in his career. And if that's the case, then you can actually tailor your offense to take advantage of that a little bit more. I don't mind how Bones played last night. Again, I feel like Bones can change the scales on his aggressiveness depending on who he's playing with. Because there was the stretch, I don't remember if it was second quarter or third quarter when Murray was out. There was a stretch in there where Bones' Jokic two-man game looked great. It was elite. And it almost was like he was so focused on that. I didn't think he was going to shoot any possessions there. I felt like he was just reading it, getting it to Jokic on the floater, and it was two or three times in a row he got it there. So the Bones aggressiveness with the second unit ones is a real question. But I still think, because I've seen him play other ways, I still feel like that is somewhat by design. And also, by the way, Matt, we've seen the second unit without him. It's been like there's been like 12-point bench nights, you know, where the entire bench scored 12 points. So we know that bench struggles to score with or without him, because I brought it up in the games that he was absent.
Well, those are also games without Ish.
Okay.
That'd be my only thing. Like, that's what I like about Ish is – the comparison here is that Bones works really, really hard to create really tough shots, and Ish Smith is able to just like ease into like just runs offense to generate like a pretty standard NBA possession. Not good, not bad, just kind of middle of the road, like very consistent and stable. And this is not like a call for Ish Smith to play over Bones. It's simply a matter of that's what I want to see from Bones. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I'm looking at, but I know this is unfair, but I have a sneaky suspicion that the offensive numbers are going to be significantly better with Bones, but I'm not sure. I'm looking it up. I'm curious.
So
they're almost the exact same. 107 and 105 Bones in the lead, but
yep. So
defense.
Christian Brown returns. You got. There was a stretch where it was Bones, Zeke, Vlatko, and then it was Bones, Brown, Zeke. DeAndre doesn't play in this game, so he plays all the young guys. And I'm not gonna like look, and here's like my entire thing. They were fine. Like they were just fine. They were
I thought Christian Brown was phenomenal. You didn't think
Christian Brown was great.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, Christian, like again,
he guarded Luka well. I thought he did a lot of things well. I mean, Luka's gonna score on you, like you're not gonna shut him down.
He drew the foul on him. There's nothing Christian can do on that. It's Luka.
It was such a light foul, too. I mean, it's one he'll learn because he did have the hint, but it was one of those ones where you're like, Jokic had the same one like the play before, too, where he made it on the run. It was the same level of contact, and you're thinking, why not there? Why is there not a foul on that one?
Yeah. So like I thought that the young guys as a unit played fine. I don't think that they played awesome. I don't think they played terrible. I think Christian Brown's great. Christian Brown needs to play over Davon Reed. Been pretty consistent. It's like,
To Malone's credit, he didn't play him. And also to Malone's credit, Blacko was really bad in this game. Uncharacteristically so. Like, he had a couple of plays in this one that I thought were like, man, usually that's not what Blacko's doing. But he was really bad, and Malone didn't go back to him.
Yeah. Malone was pretty adjust heavy in this one.
The one thing I'll say, though, because Zeke was out there too, and this is a big deal, they never targeted Zeke. He would wind up on Luka in certain just matchups, and he would even match up with him in like transition or whatever. But they would constantly go to get Bones on Luka or to get Bruce Brown on Luka. Those were the targets in this game, and even Bruce.
If you go back, late fourth quarter, he did start targeting Zeke because Luka does that to the toughest defender on the team. I am telling you, like, this has been a thing that I've watched like over and over and over again. And it's really, he does this with Gobert. He does this with Miles Turner. He does this with like, he will actively seek out.
It might just
out.
Be Biggs. He might just be trying to get Biggs.
No, because he's gone after LeBron. He's gone after like Chris
Paul. You want to know what I wonder if it is? I wonder if it has to do with put, I'll have to go back and watch, but sometimes a guy will switch that way to put the guard in the dunker spot because that makes them the secondary help. So maybe it was that.
Maybe it's that. I'm just telling you that he oftentimes finds himself matched up on, like regardless of position, whatever it seems like is going to be the hardest one for him.
Right. But I just wanted to point out that targeting Bones, everybody knows teams are going to target Bones. He's small. Like a guy like Luka is going to look for him. So that's not a surprise. But Bruce, he would routinely go after Bruce and like try to get the switch for him too. And that to me was like a, oh, okay.
Yeah. But again, I really want to make it clear that if you watch enough of Luka, you're going to wind up being like, wow, he really goes after, like, it's not picking on the weak points all the time. He did versus Bones. And honestly, I'll say this, like Bones got cooked for the first part. Settled in, and especially in the post, I thought played pretty tough. Like, you know,
it's just so hard for him, man. It's just so hard. Yeah, didn't he have a block shot? I think Bones had he had a block shot in the post.
Yeah, he had a block shot. And then I think that was on Dinwiddie. And then
right.
You called out the play where Jeff Green came over and had the help on.
It was a huge play.
Yeah. So they were fine. Again, I have been very consistent on this. Christian Brown needs a play. I asked about Christian Brown pregame. So for everybody, it's like, why don't you guys ask about? I asked about Christian Brown pregame. Malone, his tone was very interesting pregame, especially, and postgame. Postgame, he was pretty despondent.
Malone?
Yeah. It hurt. Like, that one hurt for some guys. The locker room as a whole, I would say, like, that one hurt, which is good. Like, the games need to matter.
Yeah, I think they're just sick of losing. I think you blow three games, you go from the number one seed or two seed to all the way now, you're just kind of right there in the middle of the pack with everyone. So it's a bummer.
And, but pregame, he was very much like, look, you know, I've been telling Christian he's got to stay ready. Like, I need, you know, and he said, I've got to get him in the rotation. Like, I've got to find a way to get him in. Everybody's like, how can this be difficult? You're the coach and you make the, I get that. He talked about how after the first five games, he thought he was doing all the right things. And the next five games, he thought some of those habits slipped. And so it does seem like, at least for Malone, what Malone is at least trying to sell is it was a teaching opportunity, but he gave him a chance last night. I know, I'd agree with you. I didn't see anything either.
It doesn't matter. Even if he saw him, sometimes it's like, okay, but whatever. It doesn't matter.
That's like the only player he can also teach on this team because everybody else has to play.
It might honestly be that. We've honestly thought that's the case. That's how coaches are in the NBA. They can't teach you after like year three.
Yeah. And then so he played him and he played. I thought it was really interesting he chose Zeke because he talked up like Harrison pointed this out, that he talked about how good the defense in the paint was in the second matchup with DeAndre, especially. And so Harrison and I both were like, well, gonna be a DeAndre night, and then DeAndre doesn't play and he goes to Zeke and they play switch. I thought it was a really interesting kind of like counter fake there. So what? The defense on with Zeke.
No, I'm just doing the like wind horse. Oh. Why would he say that? Why would he do that?
Yeah, why would he do that? Aaron Gordon was really upset after the game. He like the poor guy was trying to get off the, like he was trying to be the first one off the court. Like he was just like storming. And then like this one of the, I think it was one of the attendants had like a walker. And so she couldn't get through the narrow pathway with all the crowd trying to get out. And so Aaron's like waiting and he's like, and you can tell that Aaron's just like really upset and trying to get, and then
AG hasn't had the reward. This yeah. I have to kind of keep remembering this. The Nuggets have the bubble. They got the deep playoff run. They got the like, oh, we're on the main stage. AG got here and there's been nothing. And I feel like this Nuggets team plays like a team that has been to the Western Conference Finals. And AG is playing like a guy who's been in Orlando his whole career and then in purgatory with the Nuggets his whole career. And he's like, damn it, I want to be the best. I want to be the team. Don't you guys want to be the team with me?
Yeah. He and KCP both iterated the same thing when I asked about. Because my thing was, I was like, look, because I see the veterans not giving top level effort. I was like, you have to pace yourself in the course of a regular season. And KCP was like, you do. But honestly, a lot of it is, it's more about the mental side than it is. He's like, you can pace yourself physically, but you have to be engaged mentally. And we haven't done that, especially in our communication. He and AG both have said their communication defensively as a team has been bad. Like, they really feel like a lot of this is they're not on the same page. And that was like, an interesting kind of comment. The other thing I thought that was really interesting from Aaron was like, honestly, if you don't play hard, you're at more risk of getting hurt. This game is fast.
That's a good point. I actually think that might be true.
Yeah. He's like, he's like, this game is tough and it's fast. And if you are caught unaware or you're not in the right place for you to compete, you're more likely to get hurt or suffer injury. I thought that was really good. I have nothing.
AG's been great, man. AG's
been so good. He's playing so tough under the rim. Like, somebody was like, I forget who it was last night that was like, it's been pretty easy for you down there. And I'm watching his shots. I'm like, it have not been easy. He's just converted them. Like, AG's surrounded by two dudes at all times. I had a stat yesterday. He's one of the.
Yeah, you can overcorrect on these things, being like, oh, playing with Jokic gets you easy buckets, yeah. Which is true. But he's also just beasting through guys this year a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of the league leaders in contested layup field goal percentage this season. Aaron Gordon is. So, look, I'll say this. Everybody got what they wanted, which was the young guys played. I don't know if that's – like, I think with Malone, it is going to be matchup dependent. I think it is going to be – I don't think you're going to get – it's unlikely to me that you're going to get Vlatko, Zeke, Brown, Bones for units for every game. But – it did seem like Malone took a step back and reassessed things and then did go back to the young guys and gave them confidence. He turned down the quote unquote temperature a lot in terms of his approach. He was upset last night. Like, he was, again, post game, he was really upset. Like, this was, and the locker room was a mix of things. Like, there were some guys that you could tell were just, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they were internally stewing. I'm not going to sit here and claim. It just seemed like a lot of guys were like, yep, lost the game. Okay. And then some guys were really kind of upset. And so hopefully that carries over. I kind of wonder if this could be a turning point, as bad as it sounds, but you know, they got Portland on Thursday and that's going to be a tough one. Portland's playing really well. It's a division opponent and it's on the road. I will say this, that team is sick of traveling. Yeah. You were 100% right.
Well, on that point though, Matt, is they have one more road trip and then they're home for a little bit. I think that they're not in very good shape. I actually think this is part of it. Like, even Jokic to me looks like he's a little out of shape relative to what he usually is. And while I hate it, for no excuses or whatever, I do wonder if them not being at home for a consistent time has hurt their conditioning as well. Like, we always think about their just mentality and being around family or whatever. But I wonder, when you're traveling and getting into these hotels at 3 a.m. and what have you, it just messes with your rhythm. You're eating later. And then you're eating and going to bed and all this different stuff. And they just look like a team that hasn't been able to be in the weight room and maintain their conditioning the way you typically do. So I think of all the positives that should come out of the next 5-week stretch after this Portland game, the conditioning is one I'm going to really be keyed in on.
You got anything else you want to hit?
Yeah, one other thing. This is now the second game the Nuggets have lost at home against a team on the second night of a back-to-back. Yeah. And I've been talking a lot about the Nuggets are easy to play against. Even when they beat you, they're easy to play against because they're not very physical in a way that's like, oh, I'm going to get some bumps and bruises tonight. And then number two, and that they just play so ridiculously slow. Now, Dallas is good at controlling pace, but I do, watching last night's game and how tired Denver was, Denver seemed more tired than Dallas. And this is crazy to me that this is one of the things of the George Karl era is you used to be able to make teams say, second night of a back-to-back in Denver, let's shut it down. Like, we're not even playing these guys. And I just feel like nobody feels that way now because it's like, hey, this is going to be a slow-paced game. There were a million fouls. It just wasn't a very grinding game. And then lastly, and I don't know how big of a deal this is. I'm not saying it is. I'm just pointing it out. Dallas was on the second night of a back-to-back. Luka Doncic played 37 minutes. Dorian Finney-Smith played 35. Nobody on the Nuggets played more than 34. In fact, only Jokic played 34. Everybody else is at 30. Like, it's just something weird that the other team on a second night of a back-to-back is playing more minutes than you with their main guys. Just, again, I don't know if it's something or nothing, but just pointing it out.
Interesting. Okay. I kind of lean the other way where I'm like, because this is how I feel about Dallas, is like, they're going to be a really good regular season team, and then they're going to be exhausted in the playoffs, and they're going to lose.
It might be. It might be. But again, last night was one of those ones where maybe one more minute makes you win that game or something. I don't know. But just something to take note of. Part of this is Murray's fault. He got in foul trouble and it forced Malone's hand. But
yeah. All right. Let's wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll preview the Blazers game. We'll get into where the team is at. We'll talk more about what's going on across the league. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Good show today. Thanks for hanging out in the chat. Make sure to hit us on Twitter at Locked On Nuggets. Adam's at Adam_Mahrez. I'm at HP Basketball. You guys have yourselves a great day, great week. We'll see you again tomorrow on Locked On Nuggets.